Buckle up, you beauties, because we're about to dive deep into the world of all things hockey.
Pigeon!
A greasy pigeon isn't just any old bird. It's a message. It's letting the other guy know exactly where they stand. And it is not meant to be friendly.
You guys are sensitive over there.
And now, from the Pigeon's Nest, your hosts, Jeff Sullivan and Kevin Trussler. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Greasy Pigeon Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Sullivan, and with me, as always, there he is in the black and gold today. If you're watching on YouTube, that beautiful guy, Kevin Trussler. Kevin, say what up to the people. Now the hockey season has started.
What is going on, people? It's been a few weeks. You know, it's nice to see the NHL is back up and running. There's something to watch every night now, and it's fantastic. But more importantly, it's great to see your beauty face, Jeff. It's been a few weeks, Ben.
It has been. For those of you that are alive, you know that the Tampa area where we're from, where we do this from, has had some weather, to say the least. So there's been some, fortunately, let me start out, Kevin, myself, no major issues or those sort of situations for either one of us, but things are just busy and not normal. So it's taken us away from kind of our normalcy, and we're happy to get back to that. And just like some other normalcy, the Bruins are breaking our heart. Edmonton can't stop a beach ball in net up there north of the border. It is basically exactly as you expect it to be for the first couple games of the season, right, Kev?
You know, championships aren't won in October, you know, unless you're a Sabre fan, like my brother, my older brother. You know, he typically has the parade route scouted out by mid-November, but we know that it's a long season, so lots of runway left there.
Well, Colorado at 0-5 hopes you're correct with the parade being not being planned in October. But I digress, Kev. We have our guest waiting for us, and I don't want to keep him waiting as we continue to just absolutely destroy the Western Conference powerhouses of a year ago. Our guest tonight falls right in line with our recent conversations of youth hockey focus shows, especially Florida youth hockey focus shows. Our guest tonight is a gentleman by the name of Jimmy Betts. Jimmy is the current hockey director for the Tampa Bay Hockey Club, which plays out of the Tampa Bay Skating Association, TBSA, as everyone knows it, in Oldsmar, Florida. Jimmy, welcome to the Greasy Pigeon Podcast, man. We're so happy to have you in the nest. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you, fellas.
Absolutely. So, Jimmy, before we get started, hockey director is kind of a Wizard of Oz sort of position. It's the man behind the curtain. You know, you hear a lot about it, and everyone thinks that you make all the decisions and thinks that you're pulling the strings behind the scenes and directing how the whole thing works. What is your hockey background that kind of led you to where you are now, and how did you become the hockey director of TBHC?
So growing up, I played, you know, regular double-A hockey, and then I played some triple-A. Then I played a little bit of junior B, and then started coaching in hockey camps in the summertime for extra money. And then a little bit after that, I went to Finland, and I was like a third coach, graduate assistant coach, and worked with a pro team out there in a town called Barkhouse, Finland. And that probably changed my outlook on hockey, just like thinking of it as more of a real thing that you could do for a living. And then being exposed to the European game was really cool. And I mean, it really changed my course in life. Years after that, I moved to Florida. And first thing I did was go to the local rink. And I just asked for a job. I would have done anything, Zamboni, snack bar, whatever. And then they said, well, actually, our youth hockey director is leaving. See all this hockey stuff on your resume. Do you want to be a hockey director? And I said, well, I've only coached before. I've never really directed, so I guess I'll give it a go. And at that moment, it was the Clearwater Ice Arena's in-house program. And they had just built the North Rink. And before, since there was only one sheet, they didn't really have an in-house program. So they only had 20 players. So I got to fail in front of nobody, which is perfect.
So it's the best way to start.
When I didn't know what I was doing, there was only 20 people watching. So, and then I had success there. It was just kind of beginner's luck, I think. And I got good at teaching people how to play hockey, introducing them to the game, and like kind of developing them from a grassroots or a beginner level. And then after that, I went to Extra Ice, now called Powerful Arena, and I worked for John Tucker. And then I built another in-house program. So I was like, okay, I'm not a one-trick pony. And then after that, I looked for kind of another job. And then right then, Rich Barrett's wife, Christine Barrett, and her board then, and Mark Grossman was a big part of that, but he was the VP at the time. They reached out to me to see if I wanted the job. I actually applied the year before, but then they gave it to somebody else. And then the next year they asked, and it was actually probably better timing for me anyways. And then I became the TBJL director. And then that's kind of how I got here.
Thrown into the Thunderdome of travel hockey, going from the youth program to the director of a travel program. What would you say, looking back, are the distinct differences between the two?
Well, you're a lot busier as an in-house director. Not to say that you're not busy with a travel director, but you're like kind of a one-man show with in-house, because you got to think your volunteer coaches are all beginner coaches as well. So you kind of got to be there all the time to make sure practices are run correctly. And then you're everything. You're scheduling the refs, you're coaching the teams, you're writing all the practices. You are one-man band for the most part. And but it's the best way, especially to be a skills guy, is because you just learn, just repetition after repetition is the best way. If you want to work in hockey, is work in in-house hockey. It's like a trial by fire, and you'll find out whether you really love the work or not. And it turned out I did.
Well, you clearly do, because for those of you that are just listening to us on a podcast and not watching us, Jimmy is in the hockey director office up there at Oldsmar. I know that room well. You're in that concrete room with the rink outside. You can hear the kids out on the hallway, the brothers and sisters running around. There's still ice activities. I mean, heck, Kev, our last season practice was still an hour away from starting, if I remember correctly, based on our ice time.
We've made a little change. The older ones practice super early now in the 5 o'clock hour. So harder for the coaches to get there, but the kids will drive themselves by that point. So our 18 AA practices earlier, and then 16s, we got them a little better time. I think our latest start time is in the 8 o'clock hour, not the 9 o'clock hour now.
Oh, good. Well, and that leads perfectly to my next question, because things are always changing. Ice time changes, team count changes, right? One year you have 25 teams across your organization. The next year you could have 12 or you could have 30, right? You never know. It depends on turnout and what you put together. But overall, Jimmy, what is involved in running a travel program? There's preseason, there's season prep, right? There's during the season, all the stuff you do behind the scenes. Like, I'm sure there's an hour that you could talk about probably just answering this question, but can you give us some of the high points on what, when you have to devote your time to the small number of things that you only have time for, what are they, and what's more important to you across the board?
Well, I mean, I guess to the ultimate question, what does a hockey director do? So it's the Wizard of Oz position, and there's different relationships for different programs with hockey directors. But I mean, for instance, my job is I do a lot of the planning. So you kind of set the table for a dinner party. So let's start with tryouts. So I kind of plan the ice times for the tryouts. I control the number of players. The board is a big part of this as well. We do have a board, and a lot of things, they manage the money, but I kind of deal with the day-to-day operations. So if you think of the board like an owner, then the hockey director is like the manager. So in tryouts, I'm setting up the times. You got to make sure you're not overlapping with other programs. Everybody tries out everywhere. And then you got to kind of select the coaches. And you got to get the coaches thinking the correct way and how to select teams. And you wouldn't believe it. Coaches don't always pick teams. What happens, sometimes they don't get all the players. Sometimes you have a few declines. And then, the worst thing you can end up with is half a hockey team.
Yeah.
And then you really got to shake the trees and find players if that happens, or if your trial doesn't turn out well. And then sometimes you'll have two teams at the same level. Like we have two orange teams this year at 12U. And so another thing the hockey director does is in Seehof, and the SMHL is our league, but Seehof is our kind of hockey government. They have four divisions at 10U, 12U, and 14U. They have white being the least experienced. Then they have black. And they have orange, which is pretty strong. And then they have double A. And it's always a moving target, birth year to birth year. So you have to be quite educated on the whole system to kind of understand where to place the teams. Something really nice this year is they did a placement tournament, so you get to look at the teams a little. I mean, it's not perfect, but everybody gets to look at all the teams ahead of time. So you're not sitting there in the first week of August going, man, I hope they're good. So moving on, so you kind of build your teams. You make sure your teams get selected. Then you have your head coaches. And then you have a coaches meeting somewhere in the summertime, and you kind of set the table once again. You say, all right, this is how I want it to go. This is kind of how I want you to manage your groups. For instance, I'm pretty hard on the guys about planning practices. I think creating a positive learning environment on the ice is probably the most important thing you can do as a coach. So a lot of the stuff with the communication I have with the coaches is about practices and what kind of environment we're building. Moving on to, then we get into the season, and then we kind of make sure we have team managers all at the right places. And I was listening to your team manager episode, so it's already been discussed how important a team manager is to a group. The one thing, I have a rule that the team manager cannot be the coach's wife.
Hey, I second that rule, Jimmy. I second that rule.
your situation is the exception to the rule, but for multiple reasons, it should not be. But hopefully you get good team managers, and you got to make sure you got assistants, usually volunteer hockey dads, which God love them. Then you got to make sure all the coaches have their CEP, which stands for Coach Education Program. And that's USA Hockey's education arm. USA Hockey does probably the best job, at least that I'm aware of, in youth sports at educating their coaches. They've realized that volunteers are part of it. It's what makes the world go round in youth sports. I heard on another podcast you mentioned, well, it's paid coaches versus dad coaches and all that. We've kind of leaned more towards paid coaches, non-dad head coaches, just mainly because the perception. But I didn't paint myself into a corner. It's not on our website. It doesn't say only. If I have a Dimitri, that's a dad coach. Or, like, for instance, Braden Coburn is our 2011 coach. I'm not walking away from that.
There's some pedigree there, no doubt.
I'm not walking away from a Kevin Trussler either.
Oh, buddy. Oh, that's, yeah, appreciate it. I appreciate that.
By the way,
that.
Thanks for the cones. Some of them are still running around here.
Just a little remembrance that, you know, you never know. Yeah, to piggyback off of that real quick, Jimmy, like, you know, we've talked about it before. You know, I think dad coaches, a lot of them get into it just because of the lack of coaches that are out there, or just having the people to choose from, right? And I'm a firm believer too. If you cannot have dad coaches on a team, I think it's fantastic. You know, our rule, we had a bunch of dad coaches on our staff, but you know, we've said it before, it was one of those where we didn't coach our own kids, and we didn't give preferential treatment to our own kids. It was one of those where we wanted nothing to. I didn't need to talk to Carter, Coach Gus, Coach Sammy, Coach Jeff. They're the ones that would have to talk to Carter.
That's
right?
The secret is don't coach your own kid. It's hard. I'm a dad coach, so.
You know, for me, I was able to flip that switch rather easy, just because, again, it was one of those, there's, you know, 18 other kids there that I could focus my time and energy. And I mean, again, it comes with all the coaches making sure that, you know, you're all on the same page and, you know, you're pulling the rope in the same direction. But, you know, how has it been, you know, the last couple years with trying to find coaches? Because that's always been a challenge, right? I mean, that's something that it's competitive out there with the amount of organizations within, you know, square miles of where you are in Oldsmar. But, you know, hockey still is a growing sport here in Florida. So it's not like, you know, we've got Michigan, Detroit, you know, Boston, those types of things. So
Minnesota,
they got
the best dad coaches.
Sure, but, absolutely.
But anyway, no, I mean, to your question, there's not exactly a line of guys built around TBSA here waiting to coach the hockey for a low amount of pay and a high time commitment. It's tough finding good coaches. And especially, like, when I first came along, I kind of evaluated, that was my key to success all the time. It's always the coaches. Coach, if you think about every single one of your players and families as like a customer of your business, even though it's a nonprofit and it's weird because it's hockey and it's all passion, but you got to think about it a little bit like a business. You want to keep your customers happy. And then we're not selling hockey as much as we're selling experiences. Like, we want a kid to have a good time. Now, doesn't mean we're not going to be competitive. We're not going to try to win, but we really want that. So the coaching culture is everything when I think about our program. And year after year, we've just kind of improved our roster a little bit. We've improved. And now we have, and this is actually the old office, by the way. There's another office down the on the other side of the bleachers that's like, it was a big locker room. And so that's our office now. So all the coaches sit down together and tie skates. And the late guys are coming in while the other guys are getting off the ice. And then I sit at the desk there. So we have touch points. So everybody knows everybody in our program. So the 10 you guys know the 12 you guys. And then the 12 you guys know the 14 you guys. Everybody kind of sees each other. So I think one of the biggest problems in youth hockey is each team ends up being like a franchise. Like, here's your coach, here's your TM, off you go. And then you really don't have a lot of awareness of the program and the organization. So you don't really have culture except for team culture. So trying to build organizational culture was the big thing we've tried to do over here in the last couple of years.
Well, that's awesome. And that's, and again, segue into my next question yet again, Jimmy. It's phenomenal making this easy for me today, buddy. I appreciate that.
Like, aside, butter.
Yeah, 100%, man. But as far as the, you know, that was one change you made. You took that room that Kevin, that's the room that we did film in that, yep. That other organization was using for the weight room, right? That larger room. I know exactly what you're talking about, Jimmy. That's perfect. Yeah. So, aside from that, right, which clearly you're proud of that move, what are some other changes that you've made or that you've been part of at the Tampa Bay Hockey Club since you've been in that building across your multiple years that you really can, you know, kind of plant your flag in and say, I did this and I am damn proud of that because it's done X or whatever. I'd be curious to know what your high points are.
And a lot of this is recent, like Tampa Bay Hockey Club times in the last year. We sort of had a program reset, so we got a chance to like look at a lot of things instead of change slowly. The Ice Storm director, when I took this job, I was actually supposed to coach for him. His name's Fred Eaton. He's a great guy. And I said, I'm sorry, Freddie, I'm going to take this job. You know, I hope you're not like mad, you know, because I was supposed to coach for him in like a few months because I was hired in the middle of spring training. And then I said, do you have any, you know, he said, oh, no, please take it. It's a good opportunity. I'd love to have somebody over there I can work with. And then he goes, I go, well, do you have any, like, advice? And he goes, don't try to change it all in one day. So I took that advice. Like, I remember it still to this day. And so slowly over time, we've changed things, built culture, and got the right people who really, really care. And then structurally, though, we've done some cool stuff. We brought in Stan Neshkash, Coach Stan, very experienced Lightning alumni. He is 100% here for the hockey and for the kids. He just like loves it. Like, so we use him as kind of a systems coach. So he works with each of our teams, helps the coaches on a little strategy, and kind of uses his experience to kind of point them in the right direction. The one thing I've also learned is not everybody's going to be at your level coaching. People have devoted different amounts of time. Everybody's at a different spot on the road. So if you have somebody like Stan, who's like very experienced, going to help the coaches along on the ice with the coaches, it's really, really helpful. So we let him run some camps and stuff. So that's another bonus for our program. We got Coach Stan, who's well known. He's probably one of the best skills guys in the area. Then we also brought Vic Marconi, who's been a TBSA staple. He's an OG in the Tampa hockey community. He knows where everything's buried. He is our goalie coach. Yeah. He's on ice goalie coaching, and he's been just wonderful. Just like he knows all of our goalies. I can ask him about any goalie in the program, and he can give you a full evaluation. So we have Vic is taking care of our goalie stuff. And the big change with the goalie stuff is I told Vic when we got him, I said, I need you involved in the practice planning. Head coaches, hockey coaches are bad at thinking about the goalies. I was like, I need you giving them insight on how their practices are experienced from a goaltender point of view. So we're not perfect there yet. So don't let me brag, but it's a step in the right direction. And then next, we brought in Jim Haverstrom. Jim Haverstrom is our coach-in-chief for Sahop. Coach-in-chief is kind of another Wizard of Oz type thing, but he kind of helps with coach education, making sure coaches are certified, planning coach education clinics and everything, and kind of coordinating the coaches and solving any problems that coaches might have in the state of Florida. So he knows all the kinds of rules. He's been a program director, just like myself, in many organizations. And then he's also a CEP trainer, which is when you take your level one, level two, level three, he's the guy teaching. So we have a guy that teaches those classes on site with our coaches every day. He coaches 8U and 10U for us, the most important because they're the littlest guys. But then he also audits practices. So him and I will go around and see what the coaches are doing, look at their practice plans, and then kind of help them along. And it's never like a baby said, we want it done this way thing. So we just try to educate as we go along. So we have a really supportive learning environment amongst our coaches with all the new additions that we've had.
So, you know, going back to what you said about all the coaches being together in the room, that was one thing that I always was like, you know, I found it interesting, specifically as we moved on and, you know, I got into my fourth, fifth, sixth year, that some of the coaches starting out didn't come on up and ask for certain drills or certain advice or, you know, not that I'm, you know, looking for that, but I was always steel with your eyes and ears, right? Like if you don't have to recreate it and it works and it's a proven, you know, drill that's worked, why wouldn't you want to ask that? So the fact that you guys are having that open dialogue within the coaching staff, that's huge.
Well, I can tell you amongst our coaches, and then I'm a rink tourist. If I'm in another town, I always try to drop by the local rink, see what they're going on. And I'm telling you, the coaches do a lot. They plan practice and everything, but the biggest thing that they miss on is they build drills, and sometimes they build drills because they're just cool, or I think they need, like, coaches are either inexperienced or for whatever reason, they don't target well. Like, every drill, like, ice time here, our new, like, our organizational rate, our discount rate is $4.95. So, I mean, you can do the math on what that is a minute, and you have to be so precious with each minute. Like, we plan our water breaks in our practice, you know, every little ounce of time we can squeeze out of that, and the coaches – all the drills aren't what my team needs. Yeah. That's right. Every drill needs to be like, you have like a working list of things in my head of my team. Oh, I don't think our side switch on the forecheck is that great. Maybe we can do something there. Oh, they got muffins. Maybe we need to do a little shooting. And the way coaching is going is the cones are going away. The flow drills are going away. It all has to look like hockey now.
Yeah.
Like, well, why can't he take a shot under pressure? Eventually, you will still get the shot, but they have to learn. So, you know, sometimes the goalies suffer a little bit because they're not getting all the shots, but they're getting more realistic shots. And if it's not happening, you're not getting the result you need, then you need to put your thumb on the scales a little bit and then kind of try to manipulate the result so your team is getting what they need.
Yeah, it's got to be game focused. I know, you know, as the season went on and, you know, you have your two games in a weekend and you can quickly realize where, you know, what are you doing right and where do you need improvement? And, you know, you have to have flow within the drills as to improving those specific areas. And I know there was a couple parents sometimes that, you know, they would come up to me and ask, you know, why are we doing that? And I'm like, well, wait until this weekend and you'll see why. And they could then visualize what we were doing in practice and how that translated into a game, right? You know, just skating around cones. Hey, great for power skating. I think that's fantastic. But at the end of the day, I think it's compete level. It's quick hit drills, small area games. It's making them work. Ice is gold, right? So if you're sitting and talking for 15 minutes of that, you're losing precious time. You know, that's the way I looked at it when I was coaching. So, but it came with preparation. You had to be prepared before. And you know, having Jeff on the staff and having a handful of assistant coaches that could move the cones or, you know, set up the next drill while the kids are having a water break and you're explaining it, you know, in less than 3 minutes is huge.
So. Yeah, that is. Or even just using your assistant well. Like, your assistant shouldn't be finding out the drills at the same time as the kids. Yeah. They should already know. They should be moving around and just doing everything you can to squeeze that little bit of toothpaste out of the tube.
Yeah.
Well, Kevin would send us the practice plan that afternoon every 3 days a week. We had, because we had two full ice and our shared ice practice 3 times a week. We would get the practice plan in the afternoon. You try to review the practice plan and get an idea what the drills are. And then when you show up, I'd always ask questions like, "Hey, are we? You know, is this drill? You know, because sometimes I don't understand the X's and O's, and it's like, hey, is this drill? Yeah, that's the drill. Okay, got it. And then that helps all that, you know, moving pucks, moving cones, getting things where they need to go in, like you said, 2 minutes time, because the kids, by the middle of the season, the kids know what's coming. As soon as you say the name, they know the drill. So now it's, you got to catch up to the kids because now they're actually faster than you trying to plan it out. But to your point,
that's a good problem to have.
It is. And that's, but that comes down to the communication and the coach being prepared every time. So with that preparation, you talked about like shooting, and Kevin always said, and I agree, your skills can be done off the ice, right? Ice is $500 an hour. You can do driveway shooting. You can do super deeker. You can do cones in the driveway. I mean, we had a guest on a few weeks ago, MK O'Brien, right? Division 1 forward for the University of Minnesota Duluth. And she talked about the hundreds of pucks that she shot every morning at 5:30 in the morning to get her shot better when she was in junior high. Like, that's what it takes to get your skill set to where it needs to be. So with that being said, Jimmy, what else is there that you all do for training? Spring trainings have become a big deal in Florida, summer sessions, skills coaches. If you don't know what you're doing, it's all over the map. Kind of what is the Tampa Bay Hockey Club's sort of guidance or expectation on what you should be doing to not only build the sport of hockey, but also allow them to have the time to maybe be a second sport athlete, which we all agree is important in the youth development.
Oh, that's a loaded question.
You're welcome. Yeah,
spring hockey. Okay, so let thy game be the teacher. You know, that's a ripped off from a different kind of thing. But you can build skills and practice with your drills or your activities. We don't even like the term drill anymore. I mean, you want to work on shooting? You can set up like a game-like scenario, and you can have a dual structure where you're working on a full. The forecheck wins. Like, you could set it up that way, and then you're going to get a shot if they're trying to score. Moving on to the loaded part of the question is the spring hockey. Okay, season ends, tryouts are in May. You have about with spring break, nobody wants to do anything there. People like to travel. There's some camps there, but you don't want to do nothing until tryouts because you want to. I always tell parents, you want to secure your training for the following year, and then you can do all the vacation you want. Kids are still in school, so it's kind of like appropriate for them to keep playing. Our season's a little, in some ways it's longer, in some ways it's shorter. We play less games than teams up north, but our season kind of lasts a little bit longer because we start in August. Like, Minnesota doesn't start until a little bit later, but then our season ends a little, we're pretty much done by the end of February, and then we go into states. Some other places go in a little later. It just varies region to region. But we're trying to give kids a best chance to succeed. So we're working skills. It's got to be for a mixed bag. You kind of want to open it up to everybody. You want to give want to give the rec guys a chance to get seen and break in. And man, that's been one of the great things about our spring training is we have very experienced coaches planning those practices. And then, you know, if it's a mixed bag, we kind of try to divide them up by skill level, but we get players out of spring training that, you know, and it introduces them to their program, lets them dip the toe in the water, meet everybody. And so we do really well with that. Last year we added spring tournament teams because honestly, it's what the people want. I don't, you know, I think it's probably a good time to do another sport, but we crafted our program for spring to be light touch, more local, only one out of state. And so they're getting that. So they don't have to go to another program if they want to play some tournaments. We get them these cool jerseys. It looks like the Gasparilla skull. They were a big hit. So that's available. Training only is available if you don't want to do that and you want to kind of just practice, but also you want to hit that other sport. So we kind of have a multifaceted approach for that. And then I was talking with our VP, Liam Lansing, about this particular subject, and we would like to try to partner with a youth sports organization. There's a local sports organization. They do soccer, flag football. They do like a whole bunch of stuff. If we could partner with them, and then it gives people exposure to hockey and us, and then we can help with that on the grassroots side. And then also we can give our players access to this other program that's local near the rink, and then they can play multi-sport as well.
That's awesome. Grow the game at the kid, at the youth level, right? With the kids, that's make it fun and keep their skills, you know, kind of growing. I think it's a win-win for everybody.
What sports did your kids play on the, in the off season?
Sully, when he was younger, did the lacrosse double as most kids up in New England do. It's lacrosse and hockey. And then he was a spring soccer player for a while and never got into baseball. He was also out in the roller, you know, rollerblading in the driveway and, you know, even as a goalie shooting pucks on net and playing street hockey with his buddies. But, he was also the kid that was outside, you know, just being outside. You know, we had the setup for it. So, he did that and kind of just would play with the friends and be that unorganized multi-sport athlete that we all used to be back in the day, eh, bud?
Yeah, oh, knock man. On the door.
Well, that's the difference, right? They took the ice out, at least where I grew up, so you didn't have a chance to skate. I know it's changed up in Canada where I'm from, where they have ice year-round now, but, you know, my son played baseball. He played in the church league baseball, which was it was painful going from Seehof playoff hockey, even at the 10U level, and then going to church baseball that was watching paint dry. But at least it was something different. Played soccer a few years, and you know the best growth that I saw from him was when he played lacrosse one year. Bigger kid, he had to run. And, you know, lacrosse is very similar to hockey, but the difference is you can't glide. You've got to run. And I felt that his footwork, you know, it increased immensely that year. He didn't want to go back. I was sort of disappointed because I think if he would have played one more year, it would have been that much better. But, you know, it was something that was nice where he was able to learn something different, use different motor skills. Because, you know, Jimmy, you probably see it. I mean, there's a lot of one-trick ponies out there, right, where they're just playing hockey, which is great. But, you know, get out there, play catch, play football, play soccer, use your feet. I don't, you know, the more of an athlete you can become, the better.
It's hard for people to understand, to connect the dots. You have to kind of just see it with your own kid. Yeah. I mean, you guys made my two favorite sports. So as a hockey coach, I encourage our group to play other sports when they can, but then I'm also like, yeah, former sport starts next Saturday.
Yeah.
but if I have any influence over it at all, I always recommend soccer and lacrosse.
Yeah,
lacrosse is great. It's kind of the same idea as hockey. You have a net, you have an object you're trying to push it in, and it's an invasion sport. There's contact even at the younger levels. Mm-hmm. And then you have to run. And you build those lower leg and abdominal muscles that are so important for skating. And then soccer is like a lot of time and space awareness, great for footwork also. Like those are the two best development sports. And I haven't tested all of them yet, so don't hoping no other sports get offended. But those two I recommend to anybody that's playing hockey, that's trying to get better at hockey, but then also have a little change of pace.
You look at, you know, basketball, you can throw in there too, right? Because you have to have vision on where to go. It's a moving, it's constantly moving. Yeah. Yep. So.
And once you get to beer league, golf is the great second sport to play because beer is the common denominator between those two. You are frustrated, you're tired, you can't do either one, and you just drink. So it works out perfectly even as you get older.
Yeah, it's, what do they call it? Swing lube?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's the off-season sport for the coaches.
Yes, it absolutely is. Yes, it's the off-weekend sport for the coaches. Trust me.
Sir, you guys got off weekends?
Yeah, down here in Florida. Sorry, director. No, we don't.
Exactly.
We're game planning. We're game planning during the weekends.
So, Jimmy, as you know, the kids get older, 8U, 10U, 12U, Kevin and I and our guests have talked about this in the past. It's all about having fun, just getting them on the ice, getting them the baseline level of the game, learn the game, love the game, get them to come back and be lifelong fans of the game, right? As much skill as you can grow is the bonus. The rest of it is fun and time away, you know, all the things that grow people at the 8, 10, 12U level. Once you get older, 14, 16, 18, some of these kids are specializing. You know, my son was one of them once he got to about the 14U level. Goaltending was his jam, and everything he did was to try to get better at that position to potentially take him wherever it can take him in the future. Kevin, I know Carter dabbled a little bit as he got a little older, but pretty much hockey became his thing. What does the Tampa Bay Hockey Club do for those older teams to help get those kids more exposure? Because as we all know, it's unfortunate you can only go so far in Florida right now. Hopefully that changes. We all agree that hopefully kids can play their entire hockey career and get to college staying in Florida. We're not there yet. It's not set up for that yet.
There's no stepping stone, really. Where Carter's at Tampa Bay Juniors is the only, like, let's call it bonus hockey, because you can play your youth hockey and just be done, and that's fine, and that's great, and then join the beer league, and then have fun with everybody else, and then try not to catch a stick in the face. But, there's talented players in Florida. Like, just because we don't have AAA doesn't mean we don't have AAA players. They were real athletes.
Correct.
And although far and few, there's kids that get to higher levels of hockey. I mean, there's kids that went to the USHL, prep school, different levels of juniors. I mean, all that stuff is bonus. And if you ask me about my hockey experience, the junior part was probably the most fun I had. Like, it was cool. Like, you're practicing every day. You're with your teammates every day. You're young. You're starting to live on your own. You're kind of learning things in sort of a controlled environment a lot of time. And it's a big thing, too. Like, junior programs are coming for the players a little earlier these days than when I was a kid. So that's a decision for the family. Like, when is it all right for your son to leave not be at the dinner table anymore? But if you got an option like Tampa Bay Juniors, that's great. And Tampa Bay Hockey Club, we focus a lot on just stabilizing the program and kind of getting a consistent product going. Now it's time for us to look to the future for our players. Because, like, what does a full experience look like for our club, like 8U to 18U? Okay, we're doing pretty good in that department now. And, you know, we just got to hold on to the players that we do have and develop them. But now I'm starting to think, last year I talked to the gentleman at the Tampa Bay Juniors, and I would like to develop a little bit of a partnership with them. We still have to have the meetings. Last year, our program went through some turmoil, so I kind of backburnered it. But Tampa Bay Juniors would be a great program because it's in-house. And if there was some situation, some relationship with our 18U team or our 16AA team where players had an opportunity there afterwards, or even if it's something as simple as dialogue, like me going, hey, I have this really good player, and, you know, I think you should take a crack at the higher level. Like, for me and my dad, we had to, like, find out all the stuff about junior hockey. And so I would like to create an education portion for our older players, and then pathways. And I think that would be fantastic. The only thing we're doing right now that we can say that we're doing is our 18 UAA team is going to the showcase leagues, which like the NAPHL. We're looking at some other ones as well. I don't know if that's the right solution, but it's something that we are doing. But I think the answer is developing relationships with NA3 teams, USPHL teams, prep schools, and then just having a relationship so we can send players there for at least for a tryout.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. You know, as someone that is still going through it, like navigating that, not really knowing how the landscape is, you know, down here versus how I grew up in Canada, it definitely, that would be beneficial, right? To have those contacts with different USPHL, you know, coaches or organizations or, you know, NA3 teams, that goes a long way because, you know, the reality is people don't know who these kids are. I mean, they can be exposed that, you know, you go to the NAPL tournaments, it's a great opportunity. If you have a bang up tournament and you really play out, you're going to get some looks. But, you know, if let's say you have an off tournament, but you are still a very skilled and talented player, they just don't know who you are. So, you know, being able to have that exposure and you know, people reaching out to the organizations, that would be key. And as a parent, I think it would be even more important because, you know, this is my third year. My son's played junior now. This is his third year. So we got a bit of the lay of the land. And, you know, I've been able to educate some parents on, you know, what to look for and some of the questions to ask. But, you know, as an organization, I think that's very important if you can have that as part of your teaching to the parents coming in and coming out.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, man, it would just be nice to just have a little help for those players and just know what's out there, what to look up. I mean, the higher end players have advisors now, which that's crazy to me that would have never even been a thought that we had when we were going up there. But the advisors, if you're going to the highest USHL North American League, advisors are part of it now. Like, and yeah. I talked to one on the phone the other day just to kind of find out what they do. And they do a lot of the education of the parents and then kind of the pathway stuff. So maybe we could do that for them a little bit.
Well, 1,000,000%. I know Carter, you guys are tied in with one Kevin for Carter and what I would assume would be Callie down the road. I'm still convinced that she's a former or a future Olympian in the family on the swimming side. But
we'll see.
I have such high expectations of Callie. Anything less than an Olympic berth is going to be disappointing for me. So Callie, no stress, but you got to get there, girl. But I mean, we talk to advisors every off season. We're approached for advisor opportunities, and we have yet to do it. But one of the things that advisors do is what you just talked about, Jimmy, where you're trying to establish a relationship with an organization that you can. Hey, I got this kid. Hey, I got this kid. Hey, I got this kid. That's what these advisors are doing, but they're doing it at the NAHL level. They're doing it at the NCDC level. So they're taking kids like my son, who is very good at the levels he's at now, but we're not, you know, getting 80 emails, right? He's not the top 1% of goalies on the planet. So we're not getting 50, 60, 70 phone calls a day that all these players want, you know, my son. So how do you get him to the next level? How do you even get him a shot at the next level?
You got to get out there and go to camps.
That's
it. You got to get out there and you got to get lucky a little bit and you got to work. That was how I broke in. So one summer, I didn't even do any practices. All I did was go to tryout after tryout after tryout because that was the only way I could get exposure to that speed and that game. I mean, you got to get out there. It seems weird and people have a tough time doing it, but send video. Like coaches will feel way more comfortable with a decision if they have a big data set.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just easier, or at least have a look. I mean, you only have so much time in the day. And unfortunately for Florida kids, where are these teams located? You know, they're all over the country. The USHL ones are in the the Midwest, the West, North Americans are kind of all over, but they're also not around Florida as much. And then NCDC is sort of on the East Coast a little bit. But then all the prep school stuff and all the colleges and stuff are in the Midwest and the Northeast. So, I mean, is somebody that's paid to find players that lives in Michigan, are they going to go to Florida, or are they just going to go down to Little Caesars?
Correct.
Or CompuWare, or the multiple high-level trip. And then the college is in Boston. There's so many schools that play hockey in the Northeast. But there's all the Massachusetts hockey they have to look at. And you know what I mean? So they don't have to travel very far. So you have to break into those circles in some way.
And that's what the advisors are getting some of these kids, is they're having those relationships with these coaches and programs. So if you are at that level and you do have that advisor, and I'm not promoting advisors, we don't have one, full disclosure, we don't have one yet. Or maybe we never will, but I do see the benefit potentially in them, just because otherwise it's me and Sully writing emails and sending film and doing it versus one guy making phone calls and sending emails to his established Rolodex to find you home. So to your point, Jimmy, it's still exposure getting out there. It's just a different way to do it. You know, I mean, if you could do Instagram all day long, you'd get all the exposure you needed out in the world and get in front of coaches. But that, again, takes time, and who has that time?
Yeah, I mean, there is YouTube and Instagram, and that's a tool. I mean, that's a nice way for people to see nowadays. That's something the kids have access to, you know, and kind of we feel it's a little vain, but putting yourself out there is not necessarily a bad idea. And the advisor thing, the problem is they're like car mechanics. There's really good ones that'll save you a lot of money, and then there's some that'll just take advantage of you because you don't know what's under the hood.
Yeah, and I was just going to say that. It's just like going to, you know, certain junior programs, right? You have to do your research. You're the one that's spending the money on their product. So anyone that tries to bully or give you ultimatums, run away. I mean, if you're that good, they're going to wait for you. And, you know, your money's good just anywhere else. So, you know, that's the problem I have, is there are those types of folks that are going to prey on people, and it's just a cash grab. You know, you have to do your due diligence.
$1,500 and then just sign you up for a trial. You can sign up for on your own.
Correct.
Right.
But you got to, it's hard, but you got to do your homework.
Yeah.
And reach out to the people that know, like anybody that wants to call, everybody in Pinellas and Hillsborough County has my phone number. I'd be happy to take 15 minutes of my time to explain or even give you a little like thread on where to start with this. Like, I mean, questions you got to ask when you're about to send your son or daughter away from home is like, what is the living situation like? Billet is a thing where your kid goes and stays with another family. And there's good billets. Most of the time, they're good people that take care of your kid and they help. And you're friends with them for the rest of your life. But then there's a few bad situations where you're not in a good situation and you're away from home. I've heard stories about not having enough to eat.
Correct. I've heard kids sleeping in their car because they were so miserable at the house and they didn't want to tell anybody. So they slept in their car outside the rink for weeks before the coach happened to stumble upon it and see it. Right. So that exists out there. And to your point, a friend of ours called me. Their son had a few opportunities and I was the person that they called. And we were on the phone for nearly an hour breaking down kind of all kinds of things and questions and answers because they had 0.0 clue about what they were into. All they knew was they had a couple opportunities to send their kid away and they didn't know the first thing about it. So to your point, lean on people that have done it or have a little bit of experience or that know, make the phone call, send the text message. People in this community will be willing to help every step of the way.
Yeah. I mean, is it in travel hockey? Like I tell all 12 of you on down, like I tell all of our coaches, first of all, you have to play your players.
Yeah.
Like you signed them, you got to play them. Now, when you get a little more competitive, a little older, you don't have to exactly play them equally. You can't sit them on the bench the whole game. But at the same time, there is a little bit of a competitive aspect there where some players may play just a little bit more. And my threshold for that is very slim for our coaches. Like, everybody's got to play. Like, sign a better team is my thing. But that's another question. Another question to juniors. Yeah. Are you going to play? There's no guarantees.
That was the number one question that I asked. You know, I love the fact that they're on the ice practicing, you know, as many days as they are. But is it just to fill a spot and take your money, you know, because you'll get better practicing, don't get me wrong, but you know, you got to get into some games as well, because that's how you learn. But when your number's called, you got to be ready to roll. But yeah, totally agree with you there, Jimmy. I mean, you're only as good as the weakest link, and you know, you got to make sure that everyone's getting better, because you know, God forbid injuries and illness happens, and if you have your air quote, you know, top players out, then what are you going to do if you know, the other players have no clue what they're doing because they haven't played?
Yeah, well, you got to be Johnny on the spot too a lot of those times. If one of the big guys goes down, that's your chance to like get up in the lineup. They're going to call your number eventually. But
yeah,
this junior programs, though, you got to make sure you're going to have a real chance to play. And I'm not saying you're going to play all the games. You know, your first year of junior, you're probably going to watch a few in the suit, but I mean, you really got to make sure that this is that you're going to get a chance wherever you go.
Yeah, and we've always said it too. Our biggest mantra has always been go where you're wanted, mm-hmm. And that's definitely where, you know, that applies at the youth level too. You know, we talked about we had the tryout episode where we talked tryouts with Mark Grossman a few weeks ago, and you know, the pressure, you got to sign tomorrow, be here, do this, that. The teams that say, hey, you know, take a time, think about it, let me know, but we really want you. Those are the teams that really will, I think, will give you the better experience. And that was always Kevin's approach and our approach and whatever else. Go where you're wanted. Go where you're going to see the ice. Go where you're going to see game speed. That's what grows you into the better hockey player. And we're all doing this for one reason, because we love the sport, because we want to make people better and make kids lifelong hockey fans. And I think all three of us agree that is basically the core of everything we do.
Yeah, I mean, it's like sharing the passion is the when you can see, that's what really sold me with the in-house stuff, is you could see you're introducing a game to a child and they're not really sure, but then you see it click one day, and then they're begging their parents to come to the rink, and then as they get a little older, they start getting into the gear and this stick and that stick. It's just, it's so much fun to watch.
Yeah, it sure is.
It's also fun to watch the parents kind of make friends that they wouldn't have made anyway. And, you know, we had all our hockey moms sitting around eating pizza, drinking wine on the last trip, you know, talking about what happened to their house in the hurricane. And it was pretty cool.
Well, that becomes your almost circle of friends, that your closest circle during the youth sports and the hockey time. I mean, yeah, the friendships that you make, you know, not only here, but, you know, wherever you go, it's a tight knit family. It's a small community, even though it's a global game, but it is a phenomenal game, and it teaches so much life experience. That's for sure.
I think that's what keeps me coming back. There's certain other careers where I could probably make a little bit more money, but the people at the rink, I love hanging out with the referees. I like talking to the ZAM drivers. I like talking to the parents, and sometimes they can be unreasonable, but I understand where, like, any kind of parent complaint generally comes from a place of insecurity, or they're right.
Well, I think it's just passion, right? You know, there's a lot of parents out there, they want the best for their kid. And, you know, again, we covered this previously, where as the kids get older, you know, our mantra was, have you asked your kid how they feel, or is this just coming from you? And you quickly realize that some parents appreciate what we've taught, or what is taught to their kids. Because again, as they're older, I mean, you know, it becomes player coach, not parent coach. You got to have that communication. But, you know, Jimmy, there still are some crazy parents out there. Let's be real.
Oh, for sure. I'm a professional crazy parent handler, you know. We're very lucky this year. We have zero crazy parents in our program this year. But it's not to say that I haven't been doing this for 10 years, so I've seen them. But half the time, it's just like, man, there's some truth in it a little bit. Often comes the playing time. Sometimes it's a little, what we call it, player dysmorphia, where they think they should be playing a little bit more. And usually the coach and the player can meet in the middle somewhere. And I'm pretty good at triaging those situations.
I've said it before. There's times you just get caught up in the moment, and it's not intentional. You know,
yeah.
You end up skipping people, specifically, you know, if you get into games where it's special teams, like more penalty killing and power play. And, you know, not to say everyone shouldn't be playing that, but, you know, as it gets older, there's trust in some players that, you know, you may have a little bit more trust in the ones that you know versus the ones that you don't. And you flat out miss it, you know. So you hope to correct that when that does happen. And
there's sometimes, I mean, coaches make mistakes too. There's some times where some guy's being quiet on the bench and you just miss. Yeah. And you didn't do it on purpose, but then now somebody's mad because you skipped somebody and they want to know why. But sometimes it's just an accident.
Yeah.
Sometimes you forget to put the goalie back in after the empty net.
Is this a tip to a real story here?
I'll get you the episode number, but go back to one of our previous episodes, and you can hear all about it, Jimmy. But yes, Kevin may have forgot to put the goalie back in after the empty netter. So
yeah,
it's a great story. Yeah, it is a great story. Yeah. They scored a second one, Jimmy. That's what makes it even better. Yeah. Right from the face-off dot.
To my defense, it was a Labor Day tournament, too, and plus-minus did matter.
It's great.
Do you think the hotel lobby got you a little bit? You're coaching guilty?
No, you know what? It was a local tourney, but it was just a pure oversight, plain and simple. You know,
just missed it is all that happened. Just missed it. But Jimmy, listen, man, we appreciate your time joining us in the nest today. I hope this has been an informative episode for you all listening out there. Not only what it takes to run an organization, but what the hockey director is doing back there. What you're doing to make the experience for all these players and parents the best it can be, knowing it's never going to be perfect. I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you know how many teams off the top of your head you have in the TBHC organization this year, top to bottom?
11 plus the Mites.
Okay. So 11 teams. I'm going to guess there's on average 15 kids a team to 18 kids a team. I'm bad at math. Rule number 74 of doing a radio show.
Other than our 18U team and our 16U team, because injuries are kind of common there, so they kind of I allow them to have a heavier roster. Both teams do not have a full roster, even though I allow that. But we limit all of our teams to 15 skaters.
Okay, good.
Now, if somebody comes along in the middle of the season, they moved here from New Jersey, we allow practice players. And then if it's a situation, I mean, very rarely will we ever have 16 skaters. It just causes too many problems. It's a weird number. Yeah, so usually our teams are 15 skaters or less.
15 skaters, 11 teams. You're looking at north of 150 players. That's, you know, north of 150 to 250 parents, right? Depending on how many are married, not married, boyfriends, girlfriends, whatever. The point is, a lot of people in your ear, Jimmy. A lot of people you're trying to do the right thing for, and you're really working hard behind the scenes to make it a great experience for everybody. And Kevin, to speak from Kevin and I, we thank you for that. Hockey doesn't run without volunteers, whether, you know, they're paid employees that are doing this for a job or they're volunteers doing it for free. They're still doing it because of one reason only. It's the passion for the sport. And we really appreciate you doing it. And like I said, we appreciate you joining us in the nest, Jimmy. And where can people find, is your website up and running? What is the website address for you? Where can people find out about TBHC?
The Tampa Bay Hockey Club website is under construction right now. It's TampaBayHC.com. So we're in the middle of a redesign there. So, but it'll be good. You can find us at the local rink at Tampa Bay Skating Academy, and we'll be on Instagram and Facebook. We'll be in your face a little bit trying to find you guys.
Now, Jimmy, again, I appreciate everything that you do. It was an honor to coach under your tutelage as a director. You know, very knowledgeable, very easy, very approachable. I wish there were more out there like you. You know, you bring the fun to the game. You grow in the game. You're doing the right thing. We need more people like you to step up and do those things. So can't thank you enough for what you've done for the program and for the area. And, you know, keep it rolling, man. We're excited to see what the Tampa Bay Hockey Club, where it goes from here. That's for sure.
Oh, man. And thank you guys for doing what you're doing. That, I mean, the parent education piece and the positive talk that you guys do is great. We're going to put your podcast link up on our website so people can actually hear what you guys are talking about. You guys have been through the ringer. Like, like, if anything, any advice I could give to a hockey parent is talk to the older ones. They know all the stuff, and then you tend to chill out and kind of know your place in the world by 14U. So talk to the older ones. They'll give you tips. You're here in hotel rooms. You know all the car rental deals, all the stuff.
Enjoy the lobby, man. Enjoy the hotel lobbies. I got to tell you, that's the part.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Unless you have an early 6 a.m. mic game, then no, don't do that.
And keep it down at the games.
That's
yes,
true. Yeah.
That is true. That's a great piece of advice to leave it on. Keep it down at the games. Jimmy, again, thank you so much for joining us in the Nest. It was a pleasure to have you. Kevin, you were C-plus as usual, buddy, but I'm glad you were here. Thank you.
We're getting closer to a B, baby. We're getting closer to a B.
That's right. Everyone, thanks for joining us in the Nest, and we will talk to you again next week. Cheers.